The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Danny and Dusty.
All right, my rock smashes your scissors.
No, not these scissors, pal. This is a special titanium steel alloy developed by NASA for the space program. These scissors that smash the Raptor smithereens.
No, not this rack. This rack happens to be kryptonite.
With the latest on the Blazers, Ducks, Beavers, and the hottest topics in sports.
Hey, what's happening, Norm?
It's a dog-eat-dog world, Sammy, and I'm wearing milk-bone underwear.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080.
No!
The Fan.
Hour number three here on a Wednesday afternoon on Danny Dusty. Whether you're listening on 1080 AM, watching along at youtube.com/1080AM The Fan or twitch.tv/1080AM The Fan. We appreciate you. We love you. Thank you for hanging out with us on this wonderful, wonderful Wednesday. Dusty live from Autzen Stadium, where I'm sure the weather is just outstanding.
Yeah, it's just cloudy.
Just cloudy?
No rain.
Yeah, never rains that
It night. Never rains in Autzen Stadium.
Never rains, except for it may drizzle on Saturday.
We
but
call
that's
that,
our rain.
We call that liquid sunshine.
It's a little bit of a drizzle.
There you go.
It's a dry rain.
An interesting note came up when I... dry rain. God, I hate that. An interesting note came up. I was diving into Pro Football Focus team unit grades, and I wanted to kind of see how this broke out in the running game. And as I started going through it, I was like, oh, that's interesting. If you just a quick sort, and the best running grade teams overall are the Atlanta Falcons, the Baltimore Ravens, the Buffalo Bills, the Green Bay Packers, the Detroit Lions, Washington Commanders. There isn't a single team in there with more than three losses, the Packers, Ravens, and Falcons. These are some of, if not the best teams in the league, and arguably the most, I would say they're the most complete offensive units in the team, or in the league. And it's an interesting spot because once you get past that, you get the Bucks, Jags, Seahawks, Eagles, Saints. So you go from basically the cream of the crop in the NFL and the most balanced teams in the NFL to teams that are leaning on the running game because perhaps they have nothing else to work with?
With the exception of Philly in there, I would say a little bit of that. Yeah,
I will not accept this Trevor Lawrence slander.
I think we can.
I mean, yeah.
It hasn't been great, Bob.
I know, but
it
still.
It had been great.
So, but I just found it to be interesting that when you start looking at this, how it all kind of broke out, and like the upper crust, like the upper echelon of running teams, or you start like the line of demarcation really hits in the top four. You've got the Falcons, Ravens, Bills, top five: Falcons, Ravens, Bills, Packers, Lions. After that, you start getting like 2 and 3 point jumps down the board, and it's when you consider where you're at in the NFL. Outside of the Chiefs, who are 16th in running grade, sandwiched between the Dolphins and the Titans and just barely above the Panthers, are there teams in the league that you really trust more than those teams?
No, because, I mean, those are the best teams in football right now. And look, the adage of... great teams run the football. Great offenses run the football. Running the football is the profile of a Super Bowl winning team. Even in the world of passing, it is true. Tom Brady's best teams were when they ran the damn ball. Peyton Manning's best years were when he had great running backs behind him, right? Like, even the best quarterbacks of all time, if they ran the ball, they were going to win. And now, are you throwing to run, or are you running to set up your passing game? That is the two different philosophies in football. And I think if you look at it with these teams that we are talking about here, Atlanta, they are pretty balanced. Baltimore runs to throw. Buffalo throws to run. Green Bay runs to throw. Detroit, balanced, but they run to throw to ease things up for Jared Goff. Washington, 100% with their rookie quarterback, they run the ball to set up their passing game and to throw the football. And so if you look at it in those terms, like, you have either wildly balanced, a run to throw, or the one team in Buffalo that is a we throw the ball to open up our ability to run the ball. And when you have Josh Allen, sometimes your throwing plays turn into running plays.
There
and
you go.
You're pretty damn effective at that, too. Kansas City being at 16th is pretty interesting to me, because the way that they are winning right now, they are running the football at an insane level. I mean, we talked about it in the Monday night game against Tampa Bay, right? Why in the world would Todd Bowles say we want to kick a PAT instead of going for two and trying to get the hell out of there with a win or a loss and you know let the chips fall where they may,
mm-hmm.
you know, when Kansas City was running the ball more effectively than they were? And so that's interesting that they are down at 16, and I would love to see where they're at since the addition of Kareem Hunt to their backfield.
The other thing I found really interesting is when you look at the passing game grids, only three, like there's the Ravens, the Bengals, and the Commanders. The Ravens are at 90.8, Bengals at 90.7. The Commanders face a 4-point drop at 87. From them, the Chargers are actually fourth at 80.2, but as a 7-point drop. And then you just get this cluster of teams basically between 79 and 75. But you see that there's just drastic drop-offs in performance grades. And I think a lot of that has to do with the lack of consistent O-line play in the passing mm-hmm. game, the lack of weapons when you start getting the next group, when you get that big drop down to the Chargers because they don't have the weapons. The Seahawks have been banged up. The Chiefs have been banged up. The Jets have been inconsistent. Like, you just kind of go through the 49ers, even though they're rated higher, they've been missing guys. The Bucs have been missing guys. The Falcons don't have an excuse. The Vikings have been missing guys. The Texans have missed. Like, you just start kind of going through this. But the Chiefs, the Chiefs are one of the only teams here that if you look at all of their grades across the board, they're above average at everything.
Yeah. Kansas City has rushed for in their outside, going back to week one where they had 72 yards, their worst rushing game of the season, 149, 128, 101, 139, 184 against the Niners, 82 against the Raiders, 124 against Tampa. They've been running the hell out of the ball. Now, their grade may not be great, missed assignments and whatnot, or back missing hole. But at the same time, they're really damn effective in running the football. I love that as we're starting to see the pendulum swing back towards running the football in more condensed formations, that you're starting to see these teams that are dominant in the run game, Baltimore, where you have two legitimate running threats of two guys that could rush for 1,000 yards. Hell, you could have a 2,000-yard back and a 1,000-yard quarterback running the football this year in Baltimore. These are the teams that are unlocking their offense even more. And look, Buffalo, they're going to go as long as Josh Allen can stay healthy. And his ability to run the ball, their backfield finally getting some sort of forward lean and movement in running the football, that could spell for this Bills team being unlocked as a legit Super Bowl contender yet again, as they were trying to work through their new wide receivers on the outside with Amari Cooper and the addition that they got there. Now that you've established your ability to run the ball effectively, you now have Amari Cooper, Keon Coleman, who's coming on, Khalil Shakir. And that, to me, makes Buffalo is so dangerous. And it doesn't seem like we're talking a lot about Buffalo right now.
Right.
I mean, a 7-2 team that
has an elite quarterback.
They have an elite quarterback. They have a defensive-minded head coach. I feel like as this season wears on, we probably won't talk about them all that much, with the exception of in a few weeks they've got Kansas City and San Francisco back-to-back. But after that, it's like their division sucks so bad. We're going to look to three games as the measuring stick for them, because the two games that they've lost have been to really good teams, right? Baltimore and then Houston, with the way Houston was playing at the very beginning of the season. They still have Kansas City, San Francisco, Detroit on their schedule. And it'll come down
and
to
a frisky Rams team.
It'll come down to those three games, though, and potentially the Rams, if they can keep this thing rolling, as to where we see Buffalo as a contender. Because right now, you're beating up on a bunch of teams that just aren't very good. You know? I mean, I think the week one win that was close, and everybody went, ooh, this isn't a what's going on with Buffalo? Well, the Cardinals are a pretty good team. And, you know, they took them down to the wire, but they won that game. As the season wears on, I think we're going to look at that win as a lot better than it was at the time. But they've beaten Miami, Jacksonville, the Jets, the Titans, the Seahawks, and then the Dolphins again. They haven't beat really like an elite or even a team that we would consider like good to great on their schedule. They beat a solid Arizona team. Other than that, they've been playing this kind of the dumpster fire team so far. And this past week against Miami, where Tua looked good and, you know, they got their quarterback back, Miami is going to be okay. But I mean, they're still working through. They're basically in week three right now, because you had to restart the entire season with Tua.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think of Have the Bills kind of run the course of the, not necessarily the boy who cried wolf, but because they've been there so many times and fallen short over the last 3 years, have they almost kind of reverted back, at least in the public eye, to the team that you're just like, I'll believe when I see it?
Yeah, because it has to be. I mean, after, you know, that AFC Championship game against the, you know, Kansas City, where 34 seconds, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's one where you just throw your hands up and you go, well, that was either you win the Super Bowl or you go packing. And, you know, Josh Allen did everything he could to win that game. Yeah, I think they are that team, especially when you look at, again, the two best teams they played this year, they lost to.
All right.
Them's the breaks.
All right, coming up next, we'll keep it in the NFL for a little bit. The Bears had a lot going for them. But there seems to be something holding them back, and it might be within the locker room. We'll get to that more here on Danny and Dusty, Danny the Fan.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, we mentioned this the other day. The Bears haven't won a road game seemingly in the last decade.
Well, it's been 18 in a row on Sundays that they've lost on the road.
They did have two wins on non Sundays under Matt Eberflus, and there's been this kind of undercurrent ever since this changeover was very apparent as far as what was going to take place, as far as the transition away from Justin Fields and, you know, no longer kicking the can on that project. The Bears brought in DJ Moore, who helped Justin Fields a little bit?
A lot.
A lot?
I think he helped him out a lot. And he helped him out enough to where there are some people saying that they shouldn't move off of Justin Fields. I mean, they got the number one overall pick, thanks Carolina Panthers, mm-hmm. and that made it pretty easy.
To but go yeah. ahead and make that decision. But I don't know if you noticed it this weekend. There was a play that popped up where it appeared that DJ Moore gave up on a route and just walked off the field when Caleb Williams was scrambling.
Yep.
And
like mid-play, just is like deuces out.
And just walked off the sideline.
Yep.
And Eberflus has said that DJ Moore rolled his ankle on the play when he left the field that Caleb Williams was still scrambling. He goes, that's what I saw, and that's what it was. DJ Moore, and since his press availability, said this is his explanation for why he left the field early. Tweaked the ankle. I was coming back because I'd seen Caleb was scrambling. My ankle went in and out. I was already, couldn't stop, so my momentum took me out of bounds, and I just walked off. The noise, I hear it, seen it, really didn't care. It is what it is. And if that doesn't sound bad already, DJ Moore said publicly, and has said publicly, multiple times since Caleb Williams was drafted, that he wishes that they kept Justin Fields.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in DJ Moore's defense, when you go back and you look at the play, when Caleb Williams starts his roll back to the other side of the field, you do see it's not like he just walks off, like you see him kind of hop.
Mm-hmm.
He has a little one hop out. But I didn't see the point where he rolled the ankle. I just see him like after he breaks to the sideline, does his job in a scramble drill, which is break to the sideline. You either come back to the ball or you wheel up the sideline. He was a come back to the ball guy. Once he came back to the ball and got to the boundary, Williams starts scrambling the other way. And at that point, it was like, well, I guess he's gone. And he just walked off and took a seat on the old bench there. So I guess I'm going to buy it. It's still a horrible optic when you put into context the fact that he did like Justin Fields. He liked the rapport that he had with Justin Fields because, I don't know,
probably because he
also
forced him the ball.
Only the receiver to throw to last year as well, and now they actually have other options.
And it feels like that there's, we're not reaching full mutiny, but it definitely feels like there's some massive disruption and disconnect in that locker room.
It's not good, dude.
And then you throw in the, I wouldn't say necessarily full-on coaching malfeasance since Luke Getsy is gone, but it's becoming more and more apparent that Ryan Pace did what was necessary to overhaul the roster, but he didn't do the second most important thing, which was overhauling the coaching staff.
And I think that's why they ended up with Shane Waldron instead of a high-level offensive coordinator like a Cliff Kingsbury type, mm-hmm. or, you know, a good play caller that could have been on the market for them, a young play caller. They had to get the retread, is because everybody kind of sensed that Eberflus may be a good coordinator on the defensive side. He is a head coach that was given one more year to figure it out, and there wasn't faith in that. Because, look, they're going to go and they're going to try to get Ben Johnson from Detroit, which apparently he wanted that job and said that would be one that he would have taken had it become available to him. And they're going to get a young offensive mind that will be a play caller himself. And that's the part of the business is, like, you may fire your offensive coordinator, but good luck getting a good one if nobody believes in the head coach. And I think it says a lot about the belief in Matt Eberflus as a head coach, mm-hmm. that he couldn't get a better offensive coordinator this past year.
And as far as the disconnect, I think a lot of this isn't being allowed to simmer and boil over because the head coach is, I mean, it feels like a lame duck, right?
Yep. 100%.
Does anybody think that he's going to be back next year?
With the way that it's going, no, because you're starting to see the chinks in the armor, right? Mm-hmm. They've lost two in a row. They're now 4-4. They were 4-2, kind of the toast of the town. They lose on a Hail Mary where he's a defensive coach. It was the defense that screwed that up, you know, to the Commanders. Now they lose another tight one. Where does the season go? You're at 500 right now. And this is like the fickle nature of an NFL season. You're in the dog days of the season now where you need to get that hope of, all right, can we get this thing back on the right track? You have the Patriots, should be a win, but then you go through a gauntlet. Packers, Vikings, Lions, Niners, Vikings, Lions. if they are quitting now, what happens during that gauntlet?
When that stretch hits you right in the teeth.
I mean, my goodness, you're playing some of the best teams in the entire National Football League, and three of them are in your own division. Could get sideways real quick in Chicago, and this will be really interesting to see how the Bears handle it organizationally, mm-hmm. and how Caleb Williams handles it individually.
If his first changeover with coach and coordinator.
And I'm talking about the adversity of now you got some grown-ass men in that locker room.
Oh, yeah.
And they are going to, it's going to be, you're not a rookie anymore. You're a professional, mm-hmm. and you need to be accountable because the quarterback, right or wrong, is always the guy held most accountable outside of the head coach.
Yep, and he in his press availability today, he said his accuracy issues are on him and he needs to be better. He goes, that's the thing that I'm known for and I haven't been good enough. So yeah,
it's tough.
At least
it's
tough,
man.
At least he's hitting that note right. Vancouver text line, when the Bears go new head coach, does that also put the GM on the hot seat? I don't think so. I think it's the first lever that you pull, and because Ryan Pace has already brought in DJ Moore and Roma Dunze and drafted Caleb Williams. Like,
he's done a great job, man. Yeah. He really has.
And if you're pulling the lever on the coach,
not the problem.
I don't think it's, hey, you get one lever to pull on the coach and now you're on the hot seat. I think they probably got a 2-year window at least, unless somehow Caleb turns out to just completely bomb over the next couple of years. Then he's on the hot seat. But beyond that, I think he's probably got at least 2 more years before you start even considering going down that path. Speaking of bombing out and going down a path that you don't want to go down, the Milwaukee Bucks are 1-6. They're one of the worst teams in the NBA. They're off their worst start in almost a decade. What the hell is going on in Milwaukee? We'll get to that and more. But first, it's the Big Kahuna, the Sports Center update.
You ever had a Big Kahuna burger?
Well, we all might want to revisit our NBA picks, and we are barely into the season.
Nah, I'm good.
You good?
Got faith? Yeah.
The Milwaukee Bucks are 1-6
to start
the season. It has been an unmitigated disaster.
Still liking my Thunder pick.
Still liking your Thunder pick. Okay. When you take a look around the league right now, there's almost no redemptive quality about the Milwaukee Bucks. And it's not just that they're losing. Looking at point differential, non-garbage time point differential, according to cleaningtheglass.com, Utah is dead last in the league, and they have been Utah has been the worst team in the league. They have, boy, have they been bad.
They're tanking the true tanky way.
Like their offense
just
has
hero ball and nothing.
Yeah, it's been bad. They have the worst offense, the 24th rated defense. It is they're 1-6 as well, and they are well on their way.
May I introduce a name idea for a Donovan Klingon fan site? Klingon the Glass.
Hey,
there you go.
Hey,
ain't bad. The Washington Wizards are at -12. Everybody knew what they were going to be. The one redemptive quality is that you've seen moments from Bob Carrington and from Alex Saar. They're two lottery picks. The New Orleans Pelicans, they've been very bad. They have a net rating of -10. And that has to do with the fact that not only the vibe's awful, everyone's injured. Like they can't cobble together a team full of NBA players. The Philadelphia 76ers also missing Joel Embiid and Paul George. Then you get to the Milwaukee Bucks, who are a -8.7. Okay, the Bucks are trailing the Hornets, the Raptors, the Magic, the Blazers, and the Hawks. Charlotte's not good. Toronto's not good. Orlando's injured. Portland's not good. Atlanta's not good. Like, you just kind of go through this and you're like, what the hell is going on? When you look at the Bucks right now, the Bucks, a team with Giannis Antetokounmpo and Damian Lillard, has the 21st rated offense.
How much do we put on this, on the shoulders of Doc Rivers?
I mean, I think you have to put a fair amount of it, because the thing that is coming out of this, and this is the thing that I believed in, coming into like making this whole thing work, right, is that if you look at the pick and roll data for Damian Lillard, it's not great right now. I would say it's not indicative of where the team is at. despite being in the 70th percentile in points per chance, which is, again, you know, you're in the upper third mm-hmm. of production. When you actually go into it, I'm pulling this back up because I need to have the actual data with Giannis in here. Excuse me. The number of picks that they have run together through seven games is 67 total picks.
Oh. And that is with the one of, statistically speaking, advanced analytics-wise, one of the best pick-and-roll point guards to ever play in the NBA?
Yes. And it's like you're trying to figure out, like, what does this pairing look like? And it's just, what is going on here? And looking at this in general, the fact is that you're not seeing Giannis really work as the screener. That's the thing, is like you go through this over and over and over again. If you're looking at the actual data of, like, if I pull it up right now,
who's getting the most action? Is it Portis or Lopez?
Yes. And that's the thing, is like the here's something crazy. This will maybe surprise Portland fans. The guy who has set the most picks in the NBA this season is DeAndre Ayton.
Oh, hey, look at that.
283. Or almost 55 picks per 100 possessions. So okay. More than 50% of the time, that man is out there setting a pick. Okay. When I go down, Giannis has had 106 picks on the entire season.
Through seven games they've played?
Mm-hmm. And this is just not indicative, and that, for if you're wondering, Brooke Lopez is at 179. He's 14th in the league. And as good as Brooke Lopez is, and as productive as he is with Dame, you are just not seeing the production come out of that pairing, the Dame and Giannis one, that you should get. You have one of the best pick-and-roll creators and scorers in the modern NBA in Damian Lillard. And even if you say he's losing his step, we just watched him drop, 44 the other night? He's still got it.
Trying to carry him.
But Giannis is also having a monster season. And yet they can't get these two guys on the same page. And being, like, when this trade happened, and this is going back, even when Dame was still here, when he would talk about, or when I would talk to him about, like, what would you think of, like, the ideal pairing? He said Giannis more times than I care to count. And basically when talking to him about it, it was envisioned like the modern-day steroided-out version of Stockton Malone. Now, is Dame the same precise creator as a passer as Stockton is? No, but Dame has gravity out to 40 bleeping feet. So yeah. you have the idea of, like, dragging Giannis and Dame out to 40 feet where you have to make a decision about one of the best pull-up shooters in NBA history from three, and the single force that is Giannis catching the ball going downhill in the middle of the floor. Like, the choices that should, like, present to a defense should fundamentally break you mm-hmm. on a given night. And yet they have not managed to figure that out. It doesn't make any sense.
I don't get it either. And look, I think one thing that a lot of people are going to be pointing to is, like, well, this is Damian Lillard can't play defense again. Chris Middleton being out. Chris Middleton isn't going to fix this for the Milwaukee Bucks because they're 21st in the NBA in points allowed per game, right? So they are giving up a lot of points this season. The fact of the matter and what you're talking about is there is no way on God's green earth they should be 18th in the NBA out of 30 teams in points scored per game.
No.
With those two guys. And especially, it's not like they're void of any outside shooters that can keep you honest if you defend the pick and roll well. You have options. You have a guy who can find soft spots, got a really good mid-range jumper in Brooke Lopez, too, who can be out on the floor. He can actually knock down a three-pointer as well, if needed. Their spacing is not the issue. It is seemingly, from what you're saying, a reluctance to run that offense of the pick and roll through Giannis and Dame, which I don't know why you wouldn't, especially at this point in the season. Like, run down the floor every damn time and put Lillard and Giannis in a pick and roll situation and see where you fall at the end of the day, because you're 1-6 right now and at the very bottom of the Eastern Conference without your first round pick next year. We were talking about the bottom falling out of the Clippers and what that would look like if that happened to them because Oklahoma City gets their pick. Well, they have it's a lottery protected.
The protections are, it's a split protections between the Nets and the Pelicans. And I believe the Pelicans get it no matter if it's in the top five, and the Nets would get it if it's from 6 through 30.
Or so you're not even getting your first round pick.
Yeah, no, they're not in a good place right now.
Oh boy.
Yeah. And there's
New Orleans capturing the flag and getting two Duke players who absolutely wouldn't want to go there.
I mean, they would then have three of them in New Orleans.
Well, I know.
Cooper Flagg, Brandon Ingram, and Zion.
Zion's face when New Orleans won the lottery was, God.
Yeah.
I don't want to do this.
But, yeah, I mean, it's really interesting to kind of see where things are at right now and where they can get it. It's not going to take that much for them to kind of figure it out, in my opinion, because the East is still so wide open. But you just kind of take a look at what they have been, and I don't think collectively basketball analysis and analysts, myself included, were more wrong than we've been about this.
Right.
Because, again, this was to me, like, if I was going to take two players in the NBA, I'm like, who would play together the best? Like, what would make, like, the basketball nirvana unstoppable two-man pairing? Like, this was the two.
Okay, if this doesn't work for Doc, then do we put Doc in the worst best coach of all time or best worst coach of all time?
He's got a title, so he's worst best coach.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think
he's close, but it's also like he's had supremely talented teams.
Are we putting him like in a Bill Fitch category?
Basically. Yeah. Like it's
who, like Bill Fitch was he not at one point close to both the winningest and losingest coach of all time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think, look, anytime you get a title, everybody goes, and then I'll be the first to say this. It's always about players. In the NBA, it's always about players.
Yeah.
But at the highest of levels, then again, talk about like the NBA finals, the little wrinkles, the things you can find, the things that you do, those things matter the most. It also, we have to point out, the Celtics no team has ever milked a singular title more than the 2008 Celtics.
Oh, yeah.
No team.
Yeah.
You would think that was a dynasty.
Was that the same season as the Paul Pierce wheelchair? Or was it a different season?
No, that was
a different season.
Or 10.
Yeah. All right.
But, yeah, that team, man, they tell you about it at all times.
Boy, Bill Fitch, he may be it, Rust.
No, NBA, seriously, it's
NBA
perfect.
Champion with the Boston Celtics in 81, two-time NBA Coach of the Year, All-Star Game head coach, one of the top 10 coaches in NBA history as well.
Yeah, a
lot of losses, too.
Yeah, one of the top winningest and losingest coaches ever.
1,956 wins. 1,998 losses.
Oh, still a touch under 500.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's a lot of games.
That's a lot of games.
2,000 plus games.
Yeah, he stuck around with those Clippers for a long time, didn't he?
Yeah, and those teams sucked.
Yes, they did.
So
hard.
All right, there you go. There's our little check-in on the Milwaukee Bucks, who are currently, despite all of this, 9-point favorites against the Jazz tomorrow. They'll get a win tomorrow. They'll get the second win of the season tomorrow.
Hey, God bless him.
Yep. God All right, bless. We'll come back and put a nice little bow on today's show before we hand you over to Isaac Zoo in primetime here on Danny and Dusty, Danny the Fan.
It's time for a Blazers report on the Fan. The inside story on the Portland Trail Blazers. Brought to you by Aztec Willie's Taqueria.
Portland Trail Blazers are off tonight. A nice little 2-day respite after playing a billion games in the span of 2 weeks. That's an actual number that happened. They will resume action tomorrow night in San Antonio, taking on the San Antonio Spurs and Victor Wembanyama. They are currently 4-point dogs. So everybody out there worried about them. They're winning too many games. The
At
Spurs,
they can't play the Pelicans too many more times.
They only got them one more time, I believe, in January. They will likely be dogs on their schedule, I believe, over the next 10 games. I was looking at the forecast. So expect the losses to pile up. But there's also the pending return of Shaedon Sharpe looming over the Trailblazers in the next week or two. I'd expect to see him start ramping up here relatively soon, and you could see him return from that shoulder injury. This Trailblazers Report on the Fan is brought to you by Aztec Willie's Taqueria, the best place to go before and after games or any event. Check them out on the corner of Southeast 15 and Broadway at AztecWillies.com. All right, as we turn and burn and close today's show, some breaking news. Shaedon Sharpe moved to questionable for the Portland Trailblazers tomorrow against the San Antonio Spurs. As I mentioned over the last couple days, Shaedon has been progressing towards returning very quickly, and he's going to get his first chance to maybe give it a go pregame and see how he feels tomorrow against the Spurs on the road.
Love to see that. Love to see it. All right, well, this music means that it's our time to leave. We'll be back tomorrow in studio with a feeling comfortable show back in our friendly confines. Up next, you got 4 hours of power from their mouths to your ears. It's prime time with us. Good Souk. Have a great Wednesday, everybody. See you Thursday.
Bye.
Look, bitches.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together, we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.